Curtis Mayfield. And I think we have on the line, I hope, Norman Otis Richmond. Are you there, Norman?
No.
Just
how
as,
are you?
Just as I thought. Don't do that. hey, listen, that's a beautiful piece of music, and we want to hear, you wrote a piece in the June 9, we seem to be focused today on June 9, the Counterpunch, about Curtis Lee Mayfield, and call him a gentle genius and a reluctant preacher. That's some pretty good preaching, the move on up. You told me, I think, earlier, this has been, what do they call that, sampled by some people. How influential is he? Tell us about who, why we should be focused, as you do in your article on Curtis Mayfield.
Well, I think that Curtis Mayfield has been, you know, there's a lot of people that have been sampled through hip-hop, you know, I guess James Brown, George Clinton, Curtis Mayfield. But Curtis Mayfield has had an international impact because he was, when he was with the Impressions, which was the singing group he started out with, Fred Cash, Sam Gooden, and Curtis Mayfield, they were basically the influence, Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and Bunny Wailer. And they recorded a lot of Curtis Mayfield's music. And Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions spent a lot of time in Jamaica. A couple of times they went, they got like a 21-gun salute when they landed at the
21
airport.
Guns.
Yeah. I mean, they were like huge. And it's very interesting that a lot of people don't realize this, but when Curtis Mayfield was with the Impressions, he never had a million seller. He basically, they were stars in the ghetto. And the first million sellers that the Impressions had was when they Curtis left, and they got a guy by the name of Ralph Johnson from Greenville, North Carolina, or Greenville, South Carolina, same place Jesse Jackson was from. In fact, Jesse Jackson recommended him to the group, but they had their first song.
Now, there, if we're going to put a list of Jesse Jackson's accomplishments, that's got to be one of them.
Yeah, and Curtis Mayfield, Ralph replaced Curtis, so they had their first million seller, and then Curtis started selling millions of records after he became a solo artist. But anyway, the people that he influenced, I mean, you know, Kanye West, Lauryn Hill recorded this stuff, can never forget about Aretha Franklin, Gladys Knight and the Pips. I mean, everybody has covered Curtis Mayfield. Curtis Mayfield's songs were very, very different because, you know, a lot of people talk about Marvin Gaye, and Marvin Gaye definitely is, you know, that What's Going On is a classic album. But,
brilliant.
You know, when Curtis Mayfield was recording those protest songs, I remember 60, you know, from the mid-60s on, and he consistently recorded those protest songs. And even the love songs that he did were different from a lot of the other love songs. I mean, he had a respect for women. No, no, maybe that's because of, you know, the fact that
you said it was his grandma. By the way, we always got to credit, once again, we go back to the church, right? His grandmother was with a spiritual organization.
Yeah, she had she was a Louisiana-born woman, and she... I think she taught Curtis, you know, the whole question of money, the business side, the spiritual side, and the business side, you know, because she was very successful in terms of the church. And Curtis Mayfield's mother was the one that basically beat him to death with books when she talked about how Curtis, Jerry Butler, who was the, I guess he's a commissioner in Chicago now, but he was friends with Curtis Mayfield from the beginning, and Curtis Mayfield was younger than all of those guys. But Jerry Butler said that Curtis Mayfield's mother was a Paul Lawrence Dunbar fanatic, and he said that Curtis Mayfield had the biggest library he had ever seen. You know, he was always reading, always, you know, because like I said in the article, while the other guys were chasing the promoter or chasing a pretty woman, Curtis would be sitting in the corner smoking a pipe and reading a book.
That makes for longevity.
Yeah.
Now, right. Let's talk about the movement people who are supporters or who also comment on the significance of his music, like Mumia Abu-Jamal. And you mentioned a local culture hero here, Lonnie Johnson, of Third World Books. You
right.
say you've actually – you heard Lonnie Johnson singing, was it
– We're a Winner.
We're a Winner. Yeah, We're a Winner.
Well, We're a Winner was a song that was banned by the black radio stations because they thought it was too strong. And he had already had to tone it down because of – there's a great arranger by the name of Johnny Pate. And the language that he was using, Johnny Pate basically made him tone it down. And then the black stations wouldn't play it anyway. But the song was so popular that, I mean, like I said, Mumia Abu-Jamal talked about singing it. And we used to demonstrate in front of the American consulate, around the fact when, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and we had all kind of demonstrations, and we used to sing, We're a Winner. That was like our theme song. And Lenny Johnston of Third World Books and Crafts, he was a great singer. In fact, he used to sing with a group called the, I think their name was the, having a moment here, junior, senior moment, but the Onyx Boys. Mm-hmm. They used to sing on CBC, in the 40s. On the air, and Lenny always never ceased to remind me that they never got paid.
Lenny had a good memory.
Yeah.
We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond. I forgot to. I always assume folks know him as a bluesologist and actually a very good singer himself, yourself. And my memory is you played piano very well. We ought to get
No, you're getting me mixed up. I had a piano, and I can play a couple of songs, but no,
I got the singing part right.
Oh, yeah. My father, Curtis Mayfield's name was Curtis Lee Mayfield, and my father was Norman Lee Richmond. And Norman Lee, he bought us a piano. He had me. He sent me to, I took drum lessons, I took guitar lessons, I took all the lessons, and I wanted to play the vibraphone, but I could have got a vibraphone, but they, where are you going to keep vibraphones in a house? We had a little two-bedroom house, but I wanted to play vibes because I wanted to be like Roy Ayers and Hutchison Bobby Hutchison was from Pasadena, and he played with Eric Dolphy and Coltrane and people like that.
Yeah.
But no, I was. I can play a few things on the piano, but no, I.
Well,
but
keeping
I
did, the, I keeping it personal, bit. You did see. You mentioned in the article you saw Curtis Mayfield at least three times in the flesh.
Yes, I did.
And did you at that? I think you said you were 14 years old. Did you see him looking at him? Was he the big figure at the time, or was he just who did you think you were looking at when you were 14 years old?
No, when I think I saw him when I was 19.
Okay.
But he started out when he was 14.
Oh, he started, right.
Yeah. No, the problem with Curtis was that we all identify with Curtis Mayfield because he was the youngest in the group. Yeah, he was the youngest person in the Impressions.
Mm-hmm.
He was the shortest.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the whole height thing, when you're coming up the over 6 feet thing, Berry Gordy had this thing about in order for you to be in the Temptations, you had to be over 6 feet. They've had to adjust that, but
well, that takes care of Little Willie John. He's out.
Yeah, but anyway,
let me ask you this: I noticed, by the way, that people, if you mention a movie. Those who were listening saying, "Oh yeah, I like that song." Then their ears really prick up. He did the music for Superfly,
Claudine. He did Sparkle. Oh, he did soundtracks for Short Eyes. That was a nice film I shouldn't say a night. It was a good film, but it was about
I like
prison.
That title.
Yeah, it was about prison. He played in a role in that. It was a prison, a movie inside prison. Very, very brutal, very realistic in terms
and
of.
And is that
system.
Short Eyes? Which one is
Short
it?
Eyes, Short Eyes, yes.
I hope our listeners go and find that. That's a chance to see Curtis Mayfield as an actor.
Yeah, he was in it, yeah.
Now, by the way, you were an anti-apartheid crusader. You were an organizer, as you pointed out, the demonstrations and whatnot, and you and folks like Lenny Johnson. Now, Curtis Mayfield disappointed you all, but he corrected himself. Tell that story.
Well, what had happened was Curtis had gone to South Africa, and I believe he said that he went there because... I think I might be getting it mixed up, but it might have been because he was going to play to all black folks or something. But anyway, mm-hmm. The go period was wrong. And there was a young man by the name of Ilombe Brass, who was the head of the Patrice Lumumba Coalition in New York City. And he knew Jerry Butler, and everybody knew Jerry Butler because Jerry Butler had a brewery, and he... financed the Impressions reunion himself, you know, and they didn't have Motown and all those people behind him. Jerry Butler basically put his, you know, put his brewery up, and that's how they, you know, they toured. It was like Impressions reunion. Mm-hmm. So Ilombe Brass, they demonstrated against the Impressions, and, you know, Ilombe Brass spoke to Jerry Butler, who everybody knew Jerry Butler. And basically, Jerry Butler sent Curtis Mayfield down and explained to him what was happening. And Curtis said that he was incorrect, and he would, make an apology, not return to South Africa until it was corrected. And that is one of the few white spots on his resume.
And the white spot. Yes. By the way, the article on June 9, Counterpunch, please go and read it. I thought that was a great line, the white spot on his record. But also, you know, we all love a conversion story. So the fact that he said, I sinned, brothers, that helps.
Yeah, right. He admitted it because, like I say, everybody respected Jerry Butler, and he and everybody knew him because, you know, Jerry Butler had been... I guess a lot of people respected Jerry Butler because he was an entrepreneur, and he basically, like I said, he didn't go to corporate. He didn't go to corporations because he had the support of corporations, but he didn't go cap in hand. He mm-hmm. he had something to offer them, so basically they made a deal. But he had this brewery, so he could finance his own thing. Whereas, you know, Motown was Motown, and they were like the
say it's a Chicago sound. What is the Chicago? What is this about Chicago?
Oh, well, the Chicago sound basically never really had one recording. They never had really didn't have a Motown. They didn't have a label. Like Detroit had Motown. Philadelphia had the sound of Philadelphia International. And Memphis had Stax, but the Chicago, Curtis Mayfield was on ABC Paramount. All those gospel artists, the Soulsters and Sam Cooke and all of those, they were on different labels. So they never, Curtis had a label, Curtom Records, but, you know, that came much, 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 much later. Mm-hmm. But the Chicago sound was... everything from Kanye West to Mahalia Jackson. Louis Armstrong was from New Orleans, but the first, I guess, when he left New Orleans, he went to Chicago. First stop was Chicago.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we talk about Thomas A. Dorsey, the father of gospel music, he was based in Chicago. So you had gospel, then you had hip-hop, you have people like Common, you have... Louis Fassi, I mispronounced his name. Louis, he was close to Kanye. Well, he's still in the land of the living, and he came out of the, I think his father was in the Nation of Islam, but he's a Muslim, and, you know, he gets a whole lot of trouble because he's a very, very, very militant are, you know, very outspoken about many issues. So you had everything from gospel to hip hop to R&B, the yeah. Shy Lights. That was, they were a great group, singing mm-hmm. group, Eugene Records.
I like any excuse to say Mahalia Jackson. That's one of the greatest names anybody ever had in their great voice. This is Norman Otis Richmond, and the title of the piece in Counterpunch is Curtis Lee Mayfield, with that middle name, gentle genius, reluctant preacher. And, you know, you quote him, the idea of being the gentle and being careful about preaching, isn't he talking about, let's preach, but let's do it right? I mean, those songs, maybe you could list some of them, but that's really good preaching. We're moving on up.
Oh, he basically said that, you know, he didn't want to be sometimes a preacher would be just preaching and basically talking to themselves. You know, like Aretha Franklin's father was, C.L. Franklin probably was the greatest black preacher in the United States. I don't say probably, he was. He had this sermon called "The Eagle Stirreth Her Nest," but he was talking about human rights at the same time, whereas a lot of the preachers were not even dealing with the whole struggle of civil rights. But Curtis Mayfield, he did a song called "Keep On Pushing," "We're a Winner," "We People Who Are Darker Than Blue." He did that later, but like a lot of those songs, he did "We're a Winner." Was a huge, huge, huge record. "Choice of Color." Many, many songs he did were, most of the songs he did were a cut above the rest. And then when he did his love songs, they were not a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am type of songs, you know. Well, let me put it this way. In his songs, there was a little foreplay in his music, you know.
Mm-hmm. So he knew, yeah, it's a matter of how to preach, and of course, if you do it right, you don't even mention that that's what you're doing. I'm really glad to see this article, June 9, Counterpunch, Norman Otis Richmond, bluesologist, Curtis Lee Mayfield, gentle genius, reluctant preacher. Great title.
He was born in June, mm-hmm. and June is Black Music Month, and Black Music Month is not getting any respect in Toronto, none whatsoever. I wrote a press release on May the 23rd, and I sent it to, you know, all the publications, including my favorite publication, Now. And they don't recognize it. But I mean, you know, 25 years at when Black Music Month was 25 years mm-hmm. old. We had a meeting and took a photograph with the then Mayor Miller. It was Milton Blake, the late Milton Blake, Mishimi, Jay Douglas, and others. And he basically supported Black Music Month. And even Rob Ford supported Black Music Month, believe it or not. And Barack Hussein Obama refused to support it. He changed the name of to African American Appreciation Music Month. So I guess he's trying to get black folks in America and black folks around the world to support Beethoven. A lot of people say Beethoven was black anyway, but that's irrelevant. But, the whole question of African-American Appreciation Month, and he just basically liquidated the whole question of Black Music Month when it started. You know, the Black Music Association was started by Lukeman is Kenny Gamble, and Lukeman and Dana Williams and others basically put together Bob Marley and Stevie Wonder on the same program, and they performed once in Philadelphia and once in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And there's a famous photograph which is taken by Cecil Brathwaite, that's the Lonely Brathwaite's slave name, but Kwame Brathwaite took this famous picture of Bob Marley and Stevie Wonder. So it's all over the internet. All you got to do is Google it. And the whole idea for Black Music Month was to recognize black music, period, you know, from from Cape Town to Nova Scotia, but Barack Hussein Obama basically nationalized it and made it an American Negro thing. You know, it was just...
And now it's almost, it's just barely on life support, right?
Oh, it's on life support.
So it's going like to start again.
None of the share newspaper, Caribbean Camera, Now, Black DJs. I don't know anybody that's even mentioned it except me. And I guess I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but that'll be on my resume.
Yeah. Well, you should be proud of that. Norman Otis Richmond, it's great to talk to you, and thanks for telling us about Curtis Lee Mayfield.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. I guess we have a little bit of that music? All right.